From the makers of Rice-A-Roni comes Macaroni, a creamy, delicious boxed mac and cheese that's not just good, it's cheesy good. Macaroni will please even the pickiest eaters with two magnificent flavors that will melt your heart, creamy cheddar and creamy white cheddar. If you love cheese, you'll love Macaroni by the makers of Rice-A-Roni. If you don't love cheese, well, that's just unbelievable. Try Macaroni. It's cheesy good.
Macaroni, the San Francisco treat.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Let's talk about the year with journalists Lise Hand, Tabitha Monaghan from The Independent, Dave Hanratty, and Untmos McDermott, not a journalist, MD of the Communications Clinic, is with us as well. But before we hear from any of them, let's hear how Leo Varadkar surprised us on the 20th of March.
My reasons for stepping down are both personal and political. I believe this government can be re-elected, and I believe my party, Fine Gael, can gain seats in the next Dáil. Most of all, I believe the re-election of this three-party government would be the right thing for the future of our country, continuing to take us forward, protecting all that's been achieved and building on it. But after careful consideration and some soul-searching, I believe that a new Taoiseach and a new leader will be better placed than me to achieve that, to renew and strengthen the team, to focus our message and policies, to drive implementation. And after 7 years in office, I don't feel I'm the best person for that job anymore. I want to finish by thanking the people of Ireland for giving me the opportunity to serve them. And I promise I'll keep working for Ireland and my community in any way I can in the future. Thank you very much.
An emotional Leo Varadkar there last March. Lise Hand, was he just suiting himself, or did he ultimately suit Fine Gael by doing what he did?
I'd say probably a bit of both. I mean, there was a lot of commentary in the weeks leading up to his resignation, that how kind of low key he'd become, and he was quite clearly lacking a certain
low energy as compared to his successors. High energy,
precisely. He was a bit lo-fi, and so that's not to say that it didn't come as a surprise. But there, you know, some people had remarked that a lot of the kind of the vim and vigor had gone out of him to a certain extent, and so he definitely did it on his own terms. There was, of course, immediately the speculation machine went into overdrive almost instantly. It was like, you know, what terrible thing is going to come out about him? You know, there must be some massive revelation.
And nothing ever did.
Nothing ever did. So there is always that slight element of, you know, when something slightly unexpected happens. But I think his reasoning, apart from his personal decision, I think he thought, well, it'll give them time to form an orderly, you know, make an orderly transition, which might give them a bump in going into, you know, the summer elections. There'll be a bit of energy in the party. So I think maybe that was his logic.
Okay, but you've been following politics for a long time,
yeah,
and you know many political leaders, and they grasp for power so eagerly, and they get to it, they do anything to actually achieve it, and then they cling to it assiduously.
Oh,
and this guy just gives it up.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember, well, certainly, you know, if you look, think of the likes of, you know, Bertie, and his you know, his sort of hands had to be prized off the handles of government buildings, essentially.
I'm thinking more Charlie Hoy.
And Charlie Hoy, and I mean, a whole litany of them. But if you look at Leo's, it's quite consistent with what Leo always said, was that, you know, he would be out of politics at a certain age. He'd sort of put in 20 years. But he always was consistently said, I don't see myself, you know, going in politics much beyond the age of 40 or whatever. He said, no, I'll go off and do something else.
And let's hear then how Simon Harris became the new leader of Fine Gael at a party convention in Athlone.
They say a week is a long time in politics. I won't ever hear that again. It's the absolute honour of my life to formally be here with you today in Athlone to accept the leadership of this great party, of our great party, of the Fine Gael party. I want to promise and pledge to you today that I will repay that trust with hard work, with blood, sweat and tears, day in and day out, with responsibility, with humility and with civility. Ladies and gentlemen, friends and colleagues, today as we gather in Athlone, this is an important moment for Fine Gael. This is a moment for Fine Gael to reset. It is a moment for Fine Gael to reconnect. It is a moment for Fine Gael to renew our commitment to the Irish people and to public service.
But Tabitha Monaghan, working on the political staff of The Independent, after the initial bounce in the opinion polls, why wasn't Simon Harris able to sustain this new energy?
Well, I think there's only so much that one person can do to carry the party. And I think that when we look at the campaign, it was very much focused on Simon Harris as the leader. And I think that's probably too much. And then we can get into conversations about what happened in Kanturk. And this new energy can only take you so far. He was like a hurricane around the country trying to meet everybody, and that can only be sustained for so long. And possibly as well, you know, when you look at when the way that the election debates went as well, you know, there was a lot of muttering from him, and you know, I don't think he was able to stand out as the person who was a calm pair of hands, maybe in comparison to Micheál Martin. And I think when you put him in comparison with the others, and I think that might have fed into that as well. But I think you're right, like there was that initial Harris hop. I think he peaked maybe in and around 26, I think it was 26% in November, and the first one he was up 3 points, and then it steadily started going down. But that, you know, Kanturk, I think we can read a little bit too much into that. The polls were already going down for that in advance, so I think there was only so much that he could have done to sustain that. But I think it was probably the right move in the end, especially for Leo. We'll never know what kind of impact it would have had if he remained as the leader of Fine Gael going into the election. But I think it probably did improve Fine Gael's chances going into the election.
Dave Hanratty, I suppose, so in some respects, Leo Varadkar's decision to go may have been prompted a little bit by what happened in referendum defeats.
Yeah, which was very much a case of the country signalling a total lack of trust in the current government, and also, I guess, a general apathy, which we've seen borne out as well with the recent general election. And I think in the case...
But sorry, in what way now? I'm sure Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael will argue that they have been essentially re-elected.
Yeah, but that's spin. I mean, like
it's not. It's the reality. Well, they're going to be in power in January.
It's both. It's Christmas, man. Let's just meet in the middle. But there is a surge. Like voter turnout is down. Like I mean, even people, like talking to people, granted, we work in the media and we were, you know, kind of doing podcasts around this kind of stuff, and, you know, maybe it was obligatory, maybe it wasn't, but it's that thing of the general public. You talk to people, and like most of them didn't even seem to realise what those initial referendums were even about, either the yes, yes, no, no, or whichever. It was very, very hard to kind of even get your head around it. I thought even working on briefs for it and that kind of thing, I'm still kind of unsure, but it was one of those things where...
This is in relation to the woman's place in the constitution and also disability rights.
Yeah, and I did see some, you know, there was some spirited online chatter, and there were people who were trying to like frame the argument in one way and say, no, like this is why this is important for these people who are vulnerable and do need X, Y, Z. But most people just didn't really turn up. And yes, granted, like I say, the end result at the end of the day when we get to the election is Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are on top, but margins of differences here. You know, like you can turn around and say, well, Sinn Féin won the popular vote again. Granted, what does it mean going forward? And I do think when
it comes to,
that's what, again, Marilyn McDonald will tell you that they did. She will insist that they are the most liked party in the country, even when the facts go otherwise. But I just want to say one thing on Varadkar, though. I think Varadkar was a case of jumping before he was pushed. I think he didn't want to see what would happen in a general election. I think he was very much aware that his own popularity had dipped. He was obviously, you know, kind of made out to be the face of this thing that was going down. Perhaps it was a sinking ship. And I do think we're going to see more from him in the future, perhaps in some form of celebrity when his book drops. I'm sure he'll be doing the media rounds then, because he has gotten a lot more emboldened, you know, in front of microphones since.
Signed up for Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure that could be. But I just, going back to the referendums there, I think it's interesting because the government obviously learned nothing from previous outings and referendums. I mean, if you go back to Lisbon 1, everybody voted that down because they had an absolute baldy notion what was going on. It wasn't explained at all. And then you look back at the Shannon referendum, which they sailed into, Taoiseach Enda Kenny sailed into completely and utterly confident that the Irish electorate would at one stroke of the Pean Lua deprive 60 senators of their job, not realising the totally and utterly outmanoeuvred by Michael McDougall, who put forward a very clever argument going, you can't trust politicians to just have a single camera house. You need a bicameral chamber so one lock can keep an eye on the other. You know, taking on referendums, you never really get the results you expect. And they obviously learned nothing from those previous failures.
And Eoin Tomás McDermott, what about the year for Sinn Féin? Because it had started the year believing that it had a realistic chance of leading the next government. Then it had, as it had in 2019, a dreadful European local elections. and then it recovered somewhat in the general election, but not by enough to put itself in a position to lead or be part of the next government.
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge now for Mary Lou MacDonald, which is that trying to re-find momentum, because back 18 months ago, I don't think I had ever really got a sense of a party on the cusp of power as much as I did with Sinn Féin, that Mary Lou MacDonald had people queuing to her door to introduce themselves to her, introduce themselves to Piers Doherty, get a sense of what Sinn Féin's policies would be, and vice versa, sharing of their policies. And then what we began to see was this steam train losing energy as it progressed closer to it. Some of that may have been influenced by immigration challenges or their challenges around their own immigration policy. Then there were again a series of crises that they would have seen around the management of some care issues, for example, the Michael McGonagall references, and then him being found guilty of child sex offences, and then Michelle O'Neill's own lack of certainty whether or not she knew about the case and the situation she found herself in. Similarly, the safeguarding challenges that we would have seen around Niall O'Donnell's text messages and the inappropriate messages to a member of the youth part of the party. And then similarly, Brian Stanley later on in the summer, in around July, with the accusation against him, and then him coming out in September 24 accusing Sinn Féin of hosting a kangaroo court. All of that created issues for them, which distracted, but then began to again slowly ebb away the momentum that they had gained. Because again, we would have seen, for example, Eoin Óibrín coming out with a very strong housing plan. But actually that didn't grab the attention because they had these other distractions coming around them with them. So the big challenge that Mary Lou will face coming into 2025 is how does she again get the momentum back? One place she could look for perhaps a little bit of guidance is into Fianna Fáil, and seeing how Micheál Martin has somehow managed to get momentum back into Fianna Fáil. Back when he took the leadership on in 2011, there was probably a sense that he got the leadership because he was the last man standing. And what he has done now over the last 13 years of rebuilding the party, slowly getting it back together, getting a really sense of vigour back, having been in government, having been in support, I think is hugely impressive. And he is one of the few politicians that I can think of who has had a capacity to get momentum back. Mary Lou is going to be faced with that challenge.
Okay, let's go to something that was quite recent and is still very fresh in the memory. Let's hear a little bit of what Nikita Hand had to say outside the courts after a jury found in her favour in relation to her civil assault action taken against the MMA fighter Conor McGregor. This is where she encouraged other victims of sexual violence to speak up.
I want to thank all the women and men out there who have supported me throughout this trial. For every person who reached out to me, a card, a letter, email, everything, it hasn't gone unnoticed. Thank you. I really appreciate it so much. I want to thank my partner, Gary, who has been so supportive for the last 4 years and has held my hand throughout this trial every day and every other day. I want to thank my mum and all my family and friends. Lastly, I want to thank my daughter, Freya, who I'm most grateful for. She has given me so much strength and courage over the last 6 years throughout this nightmare to keep on pushing forward for justice. I want to show Freya and every other girl and boy that you can stand up for yourself if something happens to you, no matter who the person is, and justice will be served. To all the victims of sexual assault, I hope my story is a reminder that no matter how afraid you might be, speak up, you have a voice, and keep on fighting for justice. I know this has impacted not only my life, my daughters, my family and friends tremendously, and it's something that I'll never forget for the rest of my life. But now that justice has been served, I can now try and move on and look forward to the future with my family and friends and daughter.
Nikita, what was the last 2 weeks?
Nikita Hand there after the case against Conor McGregor. Tabitha, she wasn't the only woman this year who has come to national prominence for bravely taking a case or bravely speaking out as a result of waiving anonymity in a criminal case, because Natasha O'Brien was another woman who I think has become a subject of a national hero.
Absolutely, and I actually interviewed Natasha O'Brien for the Indo Daily podcast, and what stood out to me about Natasha was the strength of her conviction, and that she was so brave coming out, and she really kept that story alive in that Cathal Crotty, who was convicted of assault but then got a suspended sentence after that. And I think it was her determination to keep that story alive and to put a focus on suspended sentences. It was really interesting in that it wasn't just a story about an assault, it was a story about the justice system, and I think it really cut through, and the public were talking about that, and we saw the demonstrations that of support that she got. She went to the Dáil, she got a standing ovation. And I think it was, she became somebody that people could get behind because she was so articulate with her point. And there was never, it was never hyperbole. She was just so passionate about what she said that you really believed her and you wanted to back her.
Lise Hand, Nikita Hand, no relation to you. We heard her there speak about the 4 years in the legal process. It's actually 6 years since that assault just before Christmas in 2018. Again, just how difficult must it have been for her? How brave did she have to be to go public with this, given what we subsequently learned was a degree of intimidation in relation to the bringing of the case?
Well, I mean, I think any woman that goes forward with such a case, it requires massive personal bravery. And but I think particularly when the other party involved has such a high profile as well, that just adds to the, obviously it adds to the to the intensity of scrutiny and focus on the actual case itself. And then I think, given the kind of hyper macho environment in which someone like Conor McGregor would operate in, I mean, it's MMA is a very hyper macho sport. So I think we learned that there was a certain degree of intimidation. Her home at one stage was invaded, and also, there was, I think, during the trial, somebody was, there was, seemed to be some intimation that photographs were being taken
of the jury.
And again, I mean, that's massively unsettling. And just the language of the sort of what they call the manosphere and that sort of hyper toxic masculinity that surrounds MMA in general, just, I think, must make it very uncomfortable. It's just an uncomfortable space.
Owen Tomás McDermott, then, of course, subsequently, Conor McGregor has used social media not just to defend himself, but to attack again Nikita Hand, to attack the jury, and yet seems to get an enormous amount of applause on those forums for that, and doesn't seem, despite the fact that his drinks companies have lost certain contracts, it seems that outside of Ireland there are still people prepared to do business with him, to book him for new exhibition fights.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And what's striking is that we can see, unfortunately, that often money follows violence and hatred, and that is what we have seen with McGregor. The thing about McGregor is, it's like that Trump parable that Trump tells around the snake, and the punchline is, you knew what I was when you took me in. We have always known what Conor McGregor has been like, and we have been given evidence of that over the years, whether it was punching elderly men in pubs, the multiple accusations that have been against him in terms of some of his behaviour towards women that we have seen, and that yet he is extraordinarily successful and wealthy. It's particularly striking and particularly influential amongst young men, which is particularly, again, disturbing. And we have seen his activity online being supported by the owner of X, Elon Musk. We have seen photographs of him, for example, with Vladimir Putin a number of years ago. And we've also seen now the owner, or certainly the senior man in the UFC, Dana White, coming out in support of McGregor himself. And Dana White, be noted, slapped his wife publicly in a nightclub twice and has spoken about that publicly. So that gives you a sense of the type of person we're dealing with here. But this, again, violence that we are seeing, whether it is in the Natasha O'Brien example or the Nikita Hand example, is extraordinarily disturbing to see young men appreciating the likes of McGregor, yeah, and following that influence. But also it is particularly worth acknowledging the bravery of those two women.
Okay, let's just take briefly something else, much more positive. Kelly Harrington speaking after defending her Olympic gold medal.
I've nothing left to prove. I've done it all. I've
to yourself even.
Yeah, like this one was for myself. You know, this one was for myself because I've had to dig deep. Like since Tokyo, I've had to dig deep. It's like when you climb a mountain, find a bigger mountain. This was the bigger mountain, you know, and
the biggest,
you know, and it's hard to, like, it's hard to win an Olympics, then to come back and retain the title. That's extra hard.
I think not just Kelly Harrington, Dave Hanratty, but all of the other Olympic winners of medals, and indeed those who came fourth, including Rashida Adeleke and the 4x400 women's team, gave Ireland an enormous lift throughout the year.
Massively, yeah. And this was great because you had a lot of different individual personalities across the board, including the aforementioned. And also for people like us, this became appointment television again, which we don't really have anymore. We don't have, you know, shows that we all gather around and watch on standard TV. It's very much a thing of the past. It's very, very outdated. But, you know, in the offices and around the country in houses, people were, in fact, like crowding together and shouting at the television, which is what we used to do with sports. And yes, of course, it absolutely helps when Ireland gets a clutch of gold medals and silver medals and bronze medals. And we wanted more, though. You know, we were sad for the likes of Rashida Adeleke because we were like, we wanted to win everything. But more importantly, we actually believed it. I think it was a rare example of Ireland on the world stage and us going, well, you know, we should be winning these races. We are overachieving, but we have it and we can do more if the investment is there.
Just when it came to the case of Nikita Hand and Conor McGregor, in court, Nikita Hand's barrister said that Conor McGregor or his co-accused were not being blamed for any intimidation that was being alleged, but it was being blamed on Conor McGregor's supporters. So just to clarify that. Let's go to international news here. Owen Tomás McDermott. This story, I suppose, goes back to October of 2023, but the fallout from it continued throughout the year and continues even this week. Israel deciding wrongly to accuse the Irish government of anti-Semitism. But Ireland, I suppose, has had taken a very strong position in a response to the horrors of Israel's response to the terrorist provocation of October 7th of 2023. What's your assessment of how this year has worked out in that regard?
Well, in terms of Ireland's reaction, I think it would be reflective of how the vast majority of its citizens feel. Unfortunately, Matt, we discussed Gaza on this item and show this time last year, and we all expressed how much it was breaking our heart, and I think we would still find that what we are observing and what we are seeing in Gaza is heartbreaking, with more than 50,000 people dying there. And it doesn't look that there is any necessary resolution due anytime soon, particularly with the distrustworthy person in charge of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. Yes, we are hearing that there's talk of a ceasefire, but they're now saying that won't be until the new year, which again is even more galling when you consider that will bring us to in and around 15, 16 months of the pounding of Gaza. And then we then see a general destabilizing in the area with Lebanon and Syria, and Israel then again trying to take advantage of this that instability. So overall, I don't have anything chirpy, positive or particularly enthusiastic to say about Gaza. It is heartbreaking and it is tragic. And I believe the stance that the Irish government has taken is particularly appropriate, and that one would hope and may see that the Occupied Territories Bill will be finally implemented in 2025.
Okay, let's move on and let's hear a little bit of Donald Trump claiming his victory to be the 47th President of the United States after the 5th of November election.
Look what happened. Is this crazy? But it's a political victory that our country has never seen before, nothing like this. I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president. And every citizen, I will fight for you, for your family, and your future. Every single day, I will be fighting for you, and with every breath in my body, I will not rest. rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve. This will truly be the golden age of America. That's what we have to have.
That's Donald Trump. So, is he going to be different this time around, Lisanne, do you think? Is it going to be the second coming of Donald Trump? Will it be much different to the first?
Well, it will be different because this time he's actually ready for power, whereas the last time it was a bit of a shock, and they probably spent the first year in utter chaos trying to put the administration together. This time he's all the moving pieces, you know, are coming together in place. And, you know, considering that, I suppose, three of the things that he has already spoken about are, you know, slapping trade tariffs on imports, deporting millions of people and going to absolute war with the media, it's going to be very... I genuinely still really can't wrap my head around the fact that he's actually back. I mean, even in that clip you played, he actually remarkably said one true thing, and that is we've never seen an election like this before. But it's going to be terrible. I mean, I'm not going to put any... It is going to be absolutely terrible.
Well, here's the listener says, the media seem to be the only ones who have a problem with Trump. Most hard workers are happy with him. He got the votes.
Listen, everyone loves a comeback story, okay? And that's unfortunately what we're seeing right now. And again, I keep finding myself saying this. I wish he was just a comedian. I wish he wasn't in charge of things like, you know, nuclear weapons and international policy and vulnerable people and so on and so forth, because he is funny. And I hate to admit that, but he is funny. His counterparty, Elon Musk, is not funny, and we'll get to him. I'll tell you one thing I am looking forward to, though, because Trump did promise, his many, many promises, he promised that on the first day in his new term in office, he will solve and finish the Ukraine and Russia conflict. He knows exactly what to say to both men involved there at the top of the presidency. So we can at least, you know, take that box off, because that's going to be completely fine and dandy, harmonious as hell. Everyone's kind of saying this, like, it looks like a more stable Trump government but this time. You know, I don't think so. I think we're going to see the same amount of infighting, and the aforementioned Musk, that marriage ain't going to last.
No.
This is something I intend discussing in more detail with Cal Thomas and Marion McKeown in the early weeks of January. But Tabitha, what would your assessment be of Joe Biden's legacy? Because there are many people who I think at this stage would feel the old Egypt blew it, that he really should have stepped down or made way for somebody else to run against Trump, and that he just had that disastrous debate with Trump in the summer. He left it too late and didn't give Kamala Harris or somebody else enough opportunity to build the momentum required to beat Trump.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of people will say when there was the attempted assassination in Butler, Pennsylvania of Donald Trump, and a lot of people will point to that moment as that's the moment Donald Trump won. I actually think as impactful was that debate that you mentioned. That was the moment that Joe Biden lost it. And I think that's the particular emphasis I think should be put on that as well. I think when I'm looking at it now, yes, I think I agree with Lise in that I actually don't really know how to get my head around this, especially when we look at the appointments or the appointments to come. You know, you have Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as Secretary of Health. Linda McMahon, we were talking about WWE outside, you know, formerly of WWE and into education. And then obviously Elon Musk into the Department of Government Efficiency. I actually just don't know what to make of this at all. And I think for me, what I want to look at now is what are the Democrats going to do? Are they going to take the time to look at their grassroots and reassess and go, okay, we really need to find somebody who can come back and inspire people again and really kind of build up their voter base? Because I think I feel sometimes that they lurch from election to election. And I think we saw them then, there was that scramble towards the end when Joe Biden said that he had to walk away. And then we had Kamala Harris stepping in. She clearly wasn't the right candidate in the end.
Owen, there also is a listener here says about Robert Kennedy. Imagine a man who wants pesticides out of food. There's actually things that Robert Kennedy wants which are actually good. I think he realises that the food complex in America has been feeding people very badly. But on top of that then, though, he has an extraordinary attitude towards vaccines. Even things like the polio vaccine, which was the greatest health breakthrough in America and indeed the world in the 20th century. And yet he's a man who wants to undermine vaccines. Does that disqualify him from trying to do other things that would be good?
One would think it would. The Greeks have a word, Matt, called kakistocracy, which is government run by the worst, least qualified, most unscrupulous people. And that's essentially where the US has ended up. It's beyond farce. As you have outlined Robert F. Kennedy's anti-vax views, we have heard of now Elon Musk taking on government efficiency, where, as we have read about him throughout his career, he fires people for fun. Even now, the ambassador to France blackmailed his brother-in-law with the prostitute over a real estate deal. These people are
a member of the Kushner family, of course. Ivanka is married to Jared, and it's Jared's dad.
And Benjamin Franklin, one of the world's leading intellectuals, will be spinning in his grave, him himself having been a former US ambassador to France. So what we're seeing is a kind of a crumbling, really, of morals within US politics, but that's not a surprise to us. Back to the Biden thing, I think Biden has a huge amount, or certainly the people handling Biden have a huge amount to answer for. The Wall Street Journal released a report this week that outlined the level of protection that his energy levels and his capacity were given as early as 2021 in terms of managing his diary, only giving him good news, timing meetings until the afternoon. And the idea that the thing that we had long worried about, which was his capacity, the thing that we would hoped and had hoped would be better, that we then all got to see it with our own eyes that day on the debate, and it was absolutely appalling. And that sense that that was concealed from the public for so long, and then that they tried to get him re-elected or were planning on getting re-elected, I think stinks of hypocrisy, which unfortunately has become rooted in the Democratic Party for years.
Let's hear a little bit more of Elon Musk, because in the past year he's gone from eccentric, eclectic tech billionaire to having an extraordinary influence over what's happening in American politics. You could say he made an extraordinary investment in Donald Trump, which has paid off with his net worth, his wealth, increasing by a multiple of his expenditure. In this clip, we hear him speaking at Donald Trump rallies during the presidential campaign, and Trump praising Musk following his election win.
I think this election, I think it's the most important election of our lifetime. This is no ordinary election. We're going to get the government off your back and out of your pocketbook. And America's just not just going to be great. America is going to reach heights that it has never seen before. The future is going to be amazing.
Let me tell you, we have a new star. A star is born, Elon. But he's a character, he's a special guy, he's a super genius. We have to protect our geniuses. We don't have that many of them.
I wonder, will he be rejecting government expenditure in SpaceX and things like that?
Well, I mean, the other K word, you know, is kleptocracy, which kind of fits nicely, after what Owen was saying. Because you now have, you know, there was a dinner in Mar-a-Lago last week, and I think it was Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Musk and Trump. And you just have to kind of say, this is just like they're going to go in an asset strip. I mean, they're really in there to make money. The rich are going to get massively richer. And I am guaranteeing you, the poor people who voted in thinking that Trump was going to make their lives better, that inflation would come down, the cost of living would come down, are in for a massively rude shock. Because particularly if he goes ahead and starts slapping tariffs on imports, they are suddenly going to find that they are poorer, and they will asset strip any kind of social welfare, social benefits. Like, this is, and I think it will be interesting then if maybe a couple of years down the road that they suddenly find that they are poorer and poorer. And the dream has
died. It's the great grift. The snake oil salesman, Donald Trump, has now effectively handed control over to an even greater snake oil salesman in Elon Musk.
I know, and I can't find an elegant way to talk about Elon Musk. He really does make my skin crawl. And I find it incredibly alarming when the likes of, say, Rory McIlroy comes out the day after the election and someone asks him on the course, what do you think about Trump getting back in? And he's like, oh, he likes golf, maybe he can sort out our civil war. And then he literally said, well, he's got Elon Musk now, the smartest man in the world. And I'm just like, Rory, no, I thought maybe we were past this. I thought you were better. But it's just, it's so awful. I don't understand why people would back him to such a degree. He is a living cartoon character. He is just, like, it doesn't work. Like, he wants to be talked about no matter what it is. Even if he's looking terrible, he'll take it because he wants to be the guy. But he's the guy at the party you don't want to talk to. And unfortunately, we have to keep putting up with him for, say, some time to come.
May I jump in, Matt, there?
You can, Owen.
Just very briefly, because in relation to Trump and Musk and X, what we saw X becoming was a propaganda tool for Musk or for Trump. And Musk himself said it was the world's biggest news site. And I don't know how we put that back in the bottle, because we do have to remember there is a significant proportion of Americans who have left behind. They are comparatively poorer than their parents. They've lost social status, they've lost particular standing, and there is a sense of shame. And they are, to quote Arlie Russell Horschild, strangers in their own land. They got a bang in 08 with the economic crisis. They were getting back to their feet in 2018. COVID came along, and now they're getting hammered with inflation. And the Democrats should have been the party of the working class, not the party of the liberal intellectuals, who then begin to patronise middle America on how they should feel. And I don't know how they are going to be able to fix this, but when they need to start looking at the next generation of politician coming up through and see how do they again position them in a way and develop policies in a way that scratch the itch of the American voter who feels left behind.
Okay, let's do something else entirely before our next break and our competition as well. There was months of speculation about the Princess of Wales, Kate Middleton, and then it led to this statement from her.
In January, I underwent major abdominal surgery in London, and at the time, it was thought that my condition was non-cancerous. The surgery was successful. However, tests after the operation found cancer had been present. My medical team therefore advised that I should undergo a course of preventative chemotherapy, and I'm now in the early stages of that treatment. This, of course, came as a huge shock, and William and I have been doing everything we can to process and manage this privately for the sake of our young family. As you can imagine, this has taken time. It has taken me time to recover from major surgery in order to start my treatment. But most importantly, it has taken us time to explain everything to George, Charlotte and Louis in a way that's appropriate for them, and to reassure them that I'm going to be okay.
Lise, what this reminds me of is that at the time there was wild speculation as to what was really going on, apparently, and this announcement was made. And for all that people go on about the mainstream media and what we publish or broadcast, the stuff that was going on in social media was insane.
It was absolutely bonkers. And it was absolute fevered speculation. I mean, it probably did recall the intensity of the kind of Princess Diana years. Is probably, you know, in that royal
on steroids sector,
on steroids, because you can imagine what her life would have been like if, you know, Twitter and social media had been around. There were so many rumors. There were absolute baseless, insane speculations, and it was, by the way, you know, it did bleed into the so-called mainstream media as well, that were quite happy to run, you know, where is she now kind of features and articles. But what I thought was quite interesting was, even when the video came out and she's sitting there and whatever, it didn't necessarily end all the madness, because you had people going, no, look, that's AI, that's not really her, that's a doppelganger, look, she's got six fingers, that's definitely AI.
Well, there was that photoshopped image, though, of course.
There was the photoshopped image.
Kids, which was ridiculous.
Which was insane. They didn't have to do it. But even when with presented with a video like that, people refused to believe the truth, because the speculation and the conspiracy theories were more fun and more interesting, and they just would still rather roll with those. But and then just the way the speculation, and by the way, in America, the American media didn't hold back at all. I mean, they were full out on all kinds of speculation, where the laws of libel and so on are far more relaxed. But okay. It was a real modern story for our times.
One of the biggest controversies of the year was about the ticket pricing for Oasis at Croke Park next year. Who amongst the group is going to see Oasis?
Not me.
I would not cross the road. Nope. Saw them once before. I think they're massively derivative, very boring, don't like them at all. No, I think they're humourless and...
Any strong opinions so far from them?
I endorse this fully.
I probably just get so much hate for this, but no interest.
No, well, I would have gone just for sake of it. If it was easy enough to get tickets, I would have, but I had no interest, really, honestly.
Owen?
I never thought Lise Hand had no taste. I would have had Lise pegged as cultural, sophisticated.
She is, that's why she doesn't like Oasis.
Which I'm not going to go and see that pair of derivative idiots in, like, and pay like, you know, the price of a small organ to go and see them. Yeah,
of course,
no.
You're all insulting all of the people who are going to see Oasis. Are you going on?
That's just my personal opinion.
Are you going on?
God, yeah, I'm there with bells on. And I have my parka just down. I have it all ready to go, man.
You won't need a parka in August, hopefully.
It's a fashion statement.
It's probably the only piece of clothing you have left after paying out for the tickets as well. Probably have you sold the shirt off your back.
I will say it is pretty brave to get on stage and just play the one song for about 3 hours. It's pretty good, like.
You are outraging the many Oasis fans, those who have paid big sums of money. But I suppose this is a big issue, though, Dave, isn't it?
Well, they have now. You know, like this has to be, because I want exit polls. I want Vox Pops for real this time. I want people being like, was it worth it? What was the cost breakdown here, even getting here, etc.? It's a story that's ran and ran. And of course, we did see, you know, beyond the backlash, we saw when they put their tickets on sale for North America, they did say, oh, yeah, that dynamic pricing thing, we're not doing that now. We learned our lesson, but don't worry, everyone who's already paid for your tickets, you don't get any refunds or anything.
Oh, and I believe you have to go, since you're going off to sing some Oasis songs, is it?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Myself and Christmas carols, Matt. I'd prefer if it were Oasis, but I'm looking forward to that. Also, though, I have to say, I have to highlight, Kneecap have had a wonderful year this year. They are representing Ireland on the film stage and also musically. August, winning she just saw just a quid gaeilge, and they have a capacity of mixing it up in a way that maybe not everybody fully appreciates or likes, but they're bringing the language to the people. And if we claim we have a live language or a chonga bio, the boys are doing a good job at it.
We let you go. We know you have to be elsewhere. On to Moss McDermott, thank you. Let's hear a little bit of Mowgli Bap from Kneecap and why the movie winning at the British Independent Film Awards, 7 awards in total, including the top honour, was so important.
This movie has a platform now, resonates with people around the world, is something that is sends a strong message to people around the world that their Indigenous and Native culture is important. It's something that everybody should have the ability to reclaim and to have the resources to reclaim it if it's been wiped out. And hopefully this movie will be a stepping stone for other Indigenous languages to have movies winning BAFTAs.
I'm saving it to see it at Christmas. I haven't seen it yet. Have you seen it?
To my shame, no, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. Anyone else here?
I've seen it. It's good. They're actually very convincing,
yeah,
I will say.
Yeah.
DJ Provy in particular should go into acting, in my opinion. Like, when the Kneecap thing eventually, it'll be a while, kind of tamps down, because he's very, very good.
Yeah, he is. A great talent.
Okay, maybe he'll be like Cork's finest. Cillian Murphy, let's hear him give his speech, winning the Academy Award for his portrayal of Oppenheimer in the movie of the same name.
Thank you to the Academy. Chris Nolan and Emma Thomas, it's been the wildest, most exhilarating, most creatively satisfying journey you've taken me on over the last 20 years. I owe you more than I can say. Thank you so much. Every single crew member, every single cast member on Oppenheimer, you guys carried me through. All my fellow nominees, I remain in awe of you guys, truly. I want to thank my incredible team. Big shout out to Craig Bankey, Brendan Murphy. Brendan Murphy, Mary Murphy, Yvonne McGuinness, my partner in life and art, my two boys, Malachy and Aaron, who are sitting up there. I love you so much. And I'm a very proud Irishman standing here tonight. So, you know, we made a film about the man who created the atomic bomb. And for better or for worse, we're all living in Oppenheimer's world. So I would really like to dedicate this to the peacemakers everywhere.
Of course, there were people who actually called issue with him saying peacemakers everywhere.
Jonathan Glazer, the director of The Zone of Interest, earlier in the evening had made a very pointed speech which resulted in a lot of Hollywood coming out to try and end his career.
It was a brilliant speech, and he made the point as a Jewish man that he was ashamed of what was going on. Other Holocausts have been carried out.
Mm-hmm. I thought Cillian Murphy's spin on that was, you know, as diplomatic and deferential as he could be. It was a great moment. He is a class act. I was texting a friend watching it live, and I was like, I'm nervous for our boy. And I was so, so happy when his name was read out. And he's a wonderful actor. And again, also, I should say, he and his wife recently bought a cinema in, I think, Kerry?
Dingle.
Just to keep it alive, which is a great thing to do. Like, he's a class act. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
Okay, do you know that's a good point to wish to finish?
Of course, you have to end on it. Of course, you did have to end on a Cork point. I like.
Yes,
yeah, you
absolutely.
Did. Yeah, fair play to you.
Yeah,
on you.
Fair play, exactly. Right, thank you very much, Lise Hand, Tabitha Monaghan, and Dave Hanratty for being with us.
The Last Word on Today FM.